I'm Dr. Stephanie Munt.
And I'm Dr. Ellie Summers.
And this is Two Women Running Their Mouths, a podcast for women who run by women who run. Our 80-20 rule, 80% dishing, 20% running. Welcome back to Two Women Running Their Mouths, podcast for women who run by women who run.
She got it right.
I got it right. That might already be in the intro, but never hurts to say it twice.
Yeah, I think it is in the intro, but yes, we're saying it twice because we want to. Damn it.
I wanted to finally get it right.
Yes.
Today
was the day. What are we talking about today, Steph?
We are talking about stress fractures, bone stress injuries, stress reactions. Specifically, well, we'll get probably talk about more than this, but especially what to expect with recovery.
Yeah, I think this is a topic that I've seen pop up amongst runners here and there online in like social groups. You know, somebody will say, I had this stress fracture. I'm still having pain. Mm-hmm. Help. What does it mean? What do I do? Is this normal? Should I be doing, you know, and I think that's unfortunately a reflection on management of stress fractures and bone stress injuries, that it's not always a positive reflection. I think trying to help people know what to expect after stress fracture can be helpful in like the recovery process. So that's what we're going to be touching
on today. Yeah. So let's start with, because I get this question a lot. Why is it, do you refer for imaging if you suspect a stress fracture, and what are the pros and cons there?
Yes. Most of the time I do refer for imaging if I suspect a stress fracture. Pros and cons. Well, the cons are, the time, the, financial commitment, the early stage stress even, and, the potential to find, I'm going to say artifacts, air quotes, like other things, if it's not a stress fracture. But the pros are, if we do find a stress fracture, or if they, you know, the docs do the image and they find a stress fracture, we know exactly what to do right away. So it takes the guesswork out of some of that uncertainty. So if I suspect a stress fracture in my clinic, pretty much 100% of the time, they're going to be referred for imaging. Mm-hmm. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I do exactly the same. And someone asked me, you know, what's the harm in not getting one and just treating it as a stress fracture? And I think,
it depends.
It depends. And I don't think there's necessarily harm. However, one, I think runners take it more seriously if there is an image and we do know what it is. And just like you said, then we have a plan. And, you know, worst case, it's negative. And now we can confidently move forward loading them in a different way. Great. So I don't think there's ever a case where it's like, oh crap, you know, I crap. golly.
Oh,
geez.
Poop.
Golly,
morning, geez. Potty talk on our podcast.
Potty mouth. Oh, shoot. She referred me for an image and it was negative. And now I'm angry. No, that's the worst case is like, great. We've got that clear.
Yes.
And now we can move forward confidently.
Exactly. I think that's a really important piece to this particular puzzle, because as a physical therapist, you get somebody in and you're like, oh gosh, this could be a stress fracture. And you're sort of processing in your head, you know, the risk reward of sending for imaging, because, you know, sending for imaging elevates the scenario significantly. Mm-hmm. But I think this scenario is typically worthy of elevating, because if I send somebody, I mean, I've never sent somebody for an image and have them come back being mad at me.
No.
Because if it is negative, and honestly, the majority of the time it is negative, at least in my experience, if it's negative, then it's like, bam, let's go. We have a clear indication that we don't need to offload, that we don't need to stop running, that maybe we can make some tweaks to the training plan and keep someone trending in the right direction.
Definitely.
So go ahead.
Oh, no, you're good. Have you, because this last spring, what happened to me was basically it was read wrong, or it was a false negative. Have you run into that?
Not super often, but if somebody goes for an image and they come back and the pain is still, to me, presenting similar to a stress fracture or even just a stress reaction, because we know on imaging, sometimes like for an x-ray, it might take a little bit of time before it shows up because bone remodeling has to occur. Then I don't know if it's osteocytes or clasts or blasts, light up the image a little bit. If somebody doesn't have a full stress fracture, anyway, it can take some time. I'll still treat conservatively early on, and, you know, but I think it makes the plan still a little bit more clear that we can like stair step our way to a return to sport, in a sensible fashion. And, you know, truly it might depend on the location of the stress fracture as well, or the location of suspected stress fracture.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. So in my case, we started back running and stayed conservative, and it was just getting worse after 2 weeks. So got a second opinion. So it was very much, and it was a low risk site. So, but it was very much like, all right, something isn't right here. So you could run into that, probably definitely more rare, but, you know, just using clinical judgment, right? If you're at PT on listening to this, as far as like, well, the image was negative, but it's still, like you said, it's still kind of red flaggy to me. Let's get a second opinion.
This, I think, highlights the complicated nature of stress fractures. Mm-hmm. Like truly, they are fairly complex in how they present in the clinic, you know, how individuals show up in the type of pain and where the pain is. And some people might not have pain when you would logically think they should have pain. So this to me is the part that we're going to try and like unpack a little bit today, because it is confusing. It's scary. It's stressful. And relatively, hard to, you know, perfectly make recommendations.
Yeah. And with that said, yeah, I completely agree. The symptoms can vary widely. And yes. with that, I think the subjective is where I get most of my information.
100%.
So I think we should delve into that, because it can present, just like you said, very like you wouldn't expect bone to respond that way. Like I've had multiple where it warms up almost, like I limped the first half mile of a run and I'd be fine for the rest of it. And that's not what you would typically think for bone, right? So,
you would think it gets worse with, you know.
So you really have
humans are amazing. I mean,
humans are amazing for sure. So the subjective is going to be super important, and in most conditions, but I think in this one especially, in my experience.
What are some things that might come up that would make you start to think this could potentially be a stress fracture?
So I think one of the first things and questions that I ask is changes in training, because generally, you know, these aren't going to happen when people are sitting on the couch or going for walks, right? So it's going to be, okay, what has your training looked like even the past year? Because it's going to be something that builds over time. Have you introduced more speed work, more hills, just more volume? What has that looked like the past few months? And with that, for females, have there been changes in your menstrual cycle? You know, if someone has been amenorrheic for a few months and they tell you that, that's already like, all right, we've got some vague pain and they haven't had a period to increase their training. This is at the top of my list at this point. Let's see what else. I'll ask about relationship with food, how much they're fueling, if they know how much they should be having. And then participation in ball sports as a younger, as a kid or as an adolescent, that possibly reduces their risk. Not possibly, it does reduce their risk for bone stress injury later by 50%.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you have someone who has been a runner, again, adding to my list, let's say amenorrheic the past few months, increased their training, only ran or was a swimmer in high school, didn't play any ball sports. That's going to be one of my first differential diagnoses, I guess.
Yeah. My other one would be, have you ever had a stress fracture before?
Definitely. Great point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because if they have, like, that is even more confidence. If they've never had a stress fracture before, I'm like, okay, that's bodes well, like typically.
Absolutely.
Not always the case. So yeah, I agree that that subjective piece is actually probably more, I'm going to say more telling in ways than the physical exam piece for me.
Definitely.
To get that background on the person.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, with runners, it's likely going to be a bone or a tendon, maybe some muscle, but you don't often see, you know, you'll know if it's an ankle sprain. That's pretty, pretty easy to.
Pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Pretty straightforward. But we're, or if there's a neural component, you know, with asking about numbness, tingling, that kind of thing. But generally speaking, I think you're going to be able to maybe not pinpoint the bone, especially in the foot or where, but certain areas of pain, you know, it's not going to be a tendon issue. So things that are more vague and loading, again, loading can be tricky because sometimes they'll have night pain, they'll have pain with offloading. So that's one of those things, like, that's not completely sure.
Yeah, I think that's what makes it so tricky for the athlete and also for, you know, the clinician, and why sending for an MRI, or an MRI is the gold standard, by the way, why sending for that is so important, because, you know, you can see somebody who's like barely got any pain and pretty much able to run for the most part and still has a bone stress injury. You can see somebody who's like limping and doesn't have a bone stress injury. And I don't want to, I think today, like, we don't want to get too far in the weeds with like the clinical presentation, but I think like, let's touch on some of that just a little bit from like the perspective of like, what might a person expect to be feeling? I know we're just like, oh, it's very vague and la, la, la.
Yeah, I think so I've got a stress fracture in most bones. So I think both femurs, both tibias, only the right fibula and left cuboid. So my feet have been pretty good. So that might be harder to speak to. But in my experience, it's been something that usually gradually comes on. It might just be a little ache. And this can be confusing too, especially around the hip, because you are going to have muscle soreness and muscle tightness on that side or in that area. I mean, generally as a runner, like if someone pokes you like around your glute, like on the side of the hip, it's going to be tender.
Yeah.
Most people, like your hip flexors, like it's, there's nothing wrong if you've got some soreness, but
totally.
I think especially the longer you go, if you're running on something that's painful, of course, that side, the muscles are going to be tight. If someone does some manual work on that side, it's probably going to feel better. That doesn't mean it's not a stress fracture.
Right.
So it's generally like this deeper pain that you can't really pinpoint unless it's a lower extremity, like lower extremity, like tibia, fibula, you can often pinpoint where there's a really sore spot, or in the foot, in the thigh or sacrum, probably not so much. But it's like a deeper pain that starts to gradually get worse. And maybe because I've had so many experiences, it also comes with the sense of angst, like, yes. Oh, no, this can't be it. And so that may not be, well, if you're starting to feel some pain as a runner, you might get that anyway with any sort of pain that might keep you up, but it just, and it can hurt at rest. Night pain is pretty common if, again, the further you go along in not treating it. But other than that, yeah. Do you have anything else that?
No, I think those are, you know, progressively worsening pain is probably, you know, the most clear, I would say, indication for a layperson. Mm-hmm. So either that's progressively worsening while you're running or progressively worsening over time. So like over a couple of weeks, that's maybe an indication. And that's, you know, seeing a provider right away is great. If you can see a physical therapist, see a physical therapist that knows runners. Mm-hmm. That for certain matters, most definitely in that experience. And if you know, want to go to your doctor first, that's fine too. But Yes, I'd say with doctors too. You want to see a doctor that knows runners. Because I feel like stress fractures they're missed a lot of the time, they're mismanaged, all of that, mm-hmm. which kind of slides us into the next sort of phase of what to expect in recovery. And let's say we've got a diagnosis of a stress fracture, no location at the moment, like we've just got that diagnosis. What would be the management from there? What should a runner expect at that point?
So the first thing is you're likely going to have to stop running.
Yeah.
Bones need to unload a little bit. Depending on the area, you may or may not have to go non-weight bearing, so go on crutches. So we need more information from that.
Yeah.
But you can expect to, like, number one, first and foremost, you're going to take a break from running.
Yeah.
And how long just really depends, again, on the site and the person. So that's mm-hmm. not, there's no textbook for how long you're going to be off running. Generally, the bone healing timeline is anywhere from 6 to 12 weeks, again, depending on the severity.
Even upwards to 18 weeks. Mm-hmm. It really truly does depend. Mm-hmm.
Is it really tricky too?
It does make it really tricky. And that's why a lot of these people require, you know, a good team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereas I think it's getting better, but my experience with recovery was 6 to 8 weeks in the pool and then come back and start running. And there wasn't a gradual progression back into the running. There wasn't any strength training with that. And so I think, unfortunately, that's still happening, where you might get an image and your ortho or your doc just says 6 to 8 weeks off and then start back. Yeah. Stop everything and then start everything in 6 weeks.
Is stopping everything good or bad? Like, can you paint a picture there a little bit?
It's bad.
Yeah.
It's bad. I'm already anxious thinking about it. It's bad mentally, emotionally. It's bad for bone density of your other extremity. It's bad for muscle strength. You know, they'll have muscle atrophy.
Yes.
All bad.
This is what I want to say about bone. Bone is living tissue. It's like, it's alive. If you're alive and breathing, your bone is alive with you, which means that every single day it's adapting to whatever you're doing. The food you're putting in the mouth, the sleep you're getting, the sunlight you're exposed to, the calcium you're getting, the amount of load you're applying, it's responding like in real time and then time afterwards. So when you offload bone, this is really important to know about bone. Sometimes offloading bone is absolutely a requirement to healing that particular bone. But when you offload it long enough, it weakens. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're advocates for active recovery in stress fracture rehab. And I think that for people who have stress fractures, it's really important that you hear this, that there are ways that we can be loading your tissues safely and still building the bone up mm-hmm. so that come time for running again, you are better prepared or even just prepared.
Yeah.
For run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely. Super, super important. And there are ways that you can, just like you said, you can load that bone. You know, our muscles pulling on the bones
yep.
help to build our bone up as well. The bone responds to that. It doesn't have to be jumping, running,
right.
any impact. Obviously, that's right. helpful too. However, if you are in a state where you need to be non-weight bearing, you can still do things that will apply some load to your tissue without be having a negative effect on your healing.
Right. So active recovery is, we believe, really critical.
Yes.
For someone who maybe they're going through an active recovery and say they are experiencing some pain, what would you say about that?
Yes, this depends too. So the specifics of all of this are obviously very person dependent, and we'd be happy to chat with you or, you know, take you on as a client if this is something you've dealt with. But you can expect a little bit of discomfort going through. You know, I think it's not going to be 100% pain-free. Again, with that said, there are certain locations that pain is going to be your guide, certain stress fracture locations. So if you've got a femoral neck stress fracture and you're trying to walk and you have pain, let's not walk on it. There are certain areas where pain is going to be your guide in certain periods of time too. I think, you know, once we're past, very general, but we're past, you know, maybe 6 to 8 weeks. And even when you start getting back into walking, jogging, I have had phantom, what we call quote, air quotes, phantom pain or some sort of sensation in the exact area in my head, in the exact area where the stress fracture is, or I interpret it as that exact area. And it's scary.
It's scary.
But if it's not worse 24 hours later, you can continue to do the same activity level and it doesn't, again, it doesn't get worse. You don't have any more night pain. It's okay. You can't deal with that.
Yeah. I think that's a big concern for, people with stress fractures, athletes who have stress fractures. It's like, I have rarely met somebody who is recovering from stress fracture who's been 100% pain-free all the way up to their full return to run. I've just not seen it yet. And maybe that exists for somebody out there who had that experience and that's great. But I think that the majority of people do have some pain. And, you know, whether we describe that as like phantom pain, it's a sensation that you're feeling. It can be very scary. It can be threatening to your progress. It can feel like you're going to be set back. Mm-hmm. All of those things are very real. Which is why, you know, having a great physical therapist who understands stress fracture recovery, it can be so invaluable to have those talks with you and to, you know, give you a chance to let those fears out, speak them out, and then process and reason through it. You know, I think something that Steph and I really do well is helping people reason through these things that they're uncertain about, you know, and having somebody who can either say like, yeah, I think we can pull the reins back. Like there's no sense to push right now. Or say, you know, I think we can stay the course. Let's see how you do is just so useful.
Oh yeah. You know, if I had had access to someone like you or me as a college kid, my trajectory would have been so much different. You know, it was, instead of just being on my own, trying to figure it out, I would likely, I mean, who knows, but I doubt that I would have had 11 stress fractures by this point. I know I've talked about that before, but it also then impacts, I mean, mentally, right? Then you're more fearful. And then just your ability to be consistent, you know, if you could run slow, easy miles for 2 years, you'd be in a way better place than if you ran really fast, got a stress fracture, took a few months off, ran really fast, got a stress fracture, took a few months off. And that, I think, unfortunately, is what we see and what occurred for me in, especially in college scenarios, where it's like, I already lost a season. Now I have to get back really fast. Oh, there's another season. I want to get back as quickly as possible. I'm going to push myself. I'm behind. Right. And, you know, if you have someone, again, helping you reason through and see the big picture, that's going to be super helpful for you.
And sometimes telling you things you don't want to hear.
Most of the time telling you things you don't want to hear. Yeah.
That's what a coach does, right?
Yes. Necessary to hear, but hard to hear.
Yes. I mean, I think that's, you know, that's just coaching in a nutshell. So is you just having an objective, I'm going to use air quotes there because, you know, as you work with people, you become like, you build relationships with them, you develop maybe biases about their experience, but really having an objective sort of mind there to say, you know, we don't need to push right now. Here's your goal. What is the sense of adding? What is the sense? Like, why do we need to do that? And then just like really having someone to put you, you know, kind of ground you a little bit, I think is the advantage to having a coach, and especially physical therapist coaches when we're dealing with, you know, stress fracture recovery. We're, you know, maybe you've got a little bit of an advantage. We can kind of reason out, like, do we need to stop? Can we go? And that's a major reason why people hire us and work with us. It's not to say that if you're running with us, we're going to diagnose you with a stress fracture, but it is to say we're going to know a little bit better, like the process of should we go, should we stop?
Definitely. And then additional things from a strength training, plyometric training perspective to add in to really bolster bone density if that's something you've experienced in the past.
Bingo. Yeah. So, and that's like what to expect after stress fracture. It depends.
Yes.
Depends on a lot of factors.
But if you are told by your doc 6 weeks and start running again, probably not the best plan.
Yeah.
You should not be expecting that.
Yes. It is rare to expect that. Well, maybe it's not rare, but I would say it's rare that that's the best advice.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So, so then, okay, say somebody's like starting running again and they're kind of getting back. What would you say? This is going to be so hard to define, I know, but what would you say timeline wise is like an expected return to run after a stress fracture?
Yeah, that is really tricky. You know, if it's someone who doesn't have any of the risk factors we talked about earlier and this is their first one and we can kind of pinpoint it to a certain change in training or whatever, they could probably be back to a 30 minute straight easy run, even in, I think, 4 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, after they meet the, not 4 weeks
walking
from the fracture. Yeah. Not 4 weeks from the time, but 4 weeks from when we start a return to run progression.
Yeah.
30 minutes straight for someone who has a higher risk site or more risk factors could be 6 months. Honestly, yeah. It's varies very widely.
It does vary widely. That's why working with someone great is so helpful. Because yeah, I would agree. Like, you know, it's sort of like I've seen people recover from stress fracture. Yeah. I'm going to say stress reaction, you know, stress reaction is like the beginning stages of a stress fracture that has the potential to heal a little bit quicker. They might be able to return to sport a little bit faster. I've seen people take 6 to 9 months.
Yeah, even up to nine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that in my eyes. You know, there's nothing worse than an injured athlete because injury means that you can't participate. And what I want more than anything is for my clients to be able to participate and to continue to participate. And the sport of running, sometimes the toxicity of it, the like grind, the ego-driven statistics and numbers and all of that can really hinder this like zoomed out holistic look at an athlete that says like, how do we keep you running for your entire life?
Ever.
Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's helping people balance to me that stress piece, the recovery piece, and knowing like, you have a history of stress fracture. Like, let's just like dial it back. I've got a person with stress fracture right now. We're doing no speed work. And she was still able to sub to a half marathon with zero speed work. She never ran sub 2 paces in her training, like none. And we did that because we're trying to be conservative and thoughtful and careful. And she, I mean, it's just like a simple example of just how complicated it can be, but I think how important it is from our perspective as coaches and physical therapists to keep people out there doing what they love.
100%. Yes.
Yeah.
That's a good spot to close it up.
Wrap it up. Bow on it.
Yes.
And I want to say Steph is particularly good at this management and treatment. So, you know, if you're needing a consult, Steph is a great person to reach out to. If you're a high school runner or you have a high school runner, Steph is the person I would send people to. So virtual consult, she's in Arizona, or in-person consult, for physical therapy or coaching, she's there.
Yeah. I'm working with a high schooler right now, for her training pre-college, and yes. It's been really, I can kind of see myself in her. It's kind of eye-opening, you know, of that feeling of being behind, but really trusting the process, and she's gonna do really well. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yes, I am.
It's also like great for young girl athletes to have adult female role models on their team in some capacity. I just think it's invaluable. And I would have given anything to have had that when I was a kid. So reach out to Steph if you need help. And if you're in the Seattle area, yes, you know, I'm here too. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
All right. We will be on again next week with, we're not sure yet. It was a surprise.
You will just have to buckle your seatbelts and be excited.
Bye.
Yeah.